I mean, you're working really hard, right? You're working at a high level professional job, right? And it's like, whoa, you know, I want to stay here. I want to be here long term, but at the wages that we were hired on, it's not there. It wasn't feasible, right?
And of course, the intent is to chill academic freedom and to chill those open and honest classroom discussions, and invite conspiracy theories into the classroom.
What we're looking for is a industry to look like us, right? Mm-hmm. All of us. An industry to look like America. An industry that works for all of us, and that includes everyone, all our underrepresented populations.
I was a sergeant at arms, and all I did was hand out, you know, candy canes and sign people in. But now I have actually a job. Well, a better job, maybe a better job.
You have known me through many years. I am the same Paul, fighting a little harder because the times call for harder struggle.
You're listening to the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, produced by the Labor Radio Podcast Network, laborradionetwork.org. I'm Chris Garlock. On today's show, members of IATSE Local 122 discuss their contract fight in San Diego, fighting political interference in higher ed from Florida to Texas, Ohio to Indiana. Politicians are trying to substitute their own ideological beliefs for educational freedom by passing legislation that interferes with how colleges and universities operate. Then a chat with Jamel Thrower, National Secretary of the Electrical Workers Minority Caucus. Next, meet Ray Connor, the new president of the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council. And in our final segment, Paul Robeson sings at Peace Arch Park. This week's featured shows are Union or Bust. Two union activists discuss organizing, unions, and politics. AAUP Presents, the podcast produced by the American Association of University Professors on issues related to academic freedom, shared governance, and higher education. Say What, which covers what's going on in the world of electrical apprenticeship. Working to Live in Southwest Washington, the podcast from the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council. Ed Voices, Educational International's podcast on education policy and practice. And On the Line, Stories of BC Workers, a Canadian labor history storytelling podcast produced by the volunteers and staff of the BC Labor Heritage Center. That's all ahead on this week's edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. Here's the show.
How's everyone doing? I'm Chris Lopez, your union brother on TikTok, Instagram, all the platforms, and welcome to another episode of Union or Bust.
I want to first introduce Rudy Lambaria. Rudy Lambaria works with us. He's a field rep. He worked for Encore. Then when we organized and we got a contract, we brought him in to represent the Encore unit.
So we have Mr. Jordan Sullivan right here, and we have Julian Wilson.
Howdy, howdy.
So let's just dive into it real quick. Most people probably don't know who or what 122 is, what we do. What is a stagehand? So what's a stagehand?
I mean, a stagehand, you know, someone behind the scenes at a concert, at the theaters, at the trade shows, corporate AV, audiovisual. So we're the hands that do the work. You see the shows pop up? Well, they didn't get there miraculously. You know, we build them, we tear them down. We service the clients, and then we go home.
You know, I was watching the Super Bowl the other day, and, you know, we kind of take it for granted sometimes. I mean, all the we see the stars going on there, but you guys do a lot of work behind the scenes that no one ever gets to see.
Yeah, that's true. You know, production, you know, we're the ones, you know, miking up the keynote speakers, you know, setting up the microphones at the Oscars. I mean, you know, we do it all. And now we're in the hotels here in San Diego, you know, miking up CEOs, you know, doing the lights, you know, building the projector screens and running the power. I mean, we do it all.
Rudy, let's bring you in real quick. The first organizing drive, why did it happen? This was the second city in the U.S. to get a contract. Why did you all decide to organize back in, let's say, 2019? That's when I took part in it.
First, I would speak on, like, what my personal reason
was.
And, you know, I was working at the Sheraton San Diego Hotel and Marina right by the airport. So, to first off, that location is very iconic. That's where they had IBM come and do their first conventions. You know, Bill Gates, you know, people like that, you know, would come to the Sheraton, and they wanted to come to San Diego to do their events, right? So, you know, the tourism market, you know, was born, you know, in San Diego, you know, hotels, conventions, right? And so for me working there, there's a lot of pride, right? There's a lot of pride working at that location, and, you know, being the audiovisual group, you know, servicing these big groups like IBM, like, you know, that's just that's a big name. And, you know, so you go into a place that you do a killer job all the time. You know, you set up everything perfectly, and you're, I mean, you're working really hard, right? You're working at a high level of professional job, right? And it's like, whoa, you know, I want to stay here. I want to be here long term, but at the wages that we were hired on, it's not there. It wasn't feasible, right? With the cost of living here, and you know, it was just, I wanted to be there, but, and the company, first of all, they were an at will, right? So if they wanted to terminate you or get rid of you, I mean, you're out, right? Yeah. So there's two big things. So preserving our position at that location long term, like a career, not just some random job. And then getting paid a decent wage, you know, a fair wage. And we weren't getting that. But yet we're doing this work that we take a lot of pride in, you know what I mean? So for me, I was like, that was the two main things. I wanted to be there until I retire, and I wanted to make more money to support my family.
Welcome to AAUP Presents. I'm the host, Mariah Quinn. From Florida to Texas to Ohio to Indiana, politicians in some states are trying to substitute their own ideological beliefs for educational freedom by passing legislation that interferes with how colleges and universities operate. They're introducing bills that mandate or prohibit content in the classroom, empower partisan political appointees to determine campus policy, limit the freedom to learn, teach, and conduct research. The AUP has been at the forefront of the fight against political interference in higher education, and today we're going to talk to two people who've taken part in AUP member-led efforts to fight legislative interference in Texas and Ohio. My guests are Karma R. Chavez, the Bobby and Sherry Patton Professor and Chair of the Department of Mexican American and Latino Studies at the University of Texas in Austin, where she also serves on the executive committee of the AAUP chapter, and Sarah Kilpatrick, the AAUP Ohio Conference Executive Director. Sarah, let's give a quick overview of what's happening in Ohio. You've been fighting Senate Bill 83 in Ohio for a long time now, and it's quite wide-ranging and includes attacks on tenure, academic freedom, and collective bargaining. Can you tell us a bit about the bill?
Sure. You're right. SB 83 has been on our radar for a while. It was introduced last March. And hearing Karma talk about what has happened in Texas, I mean, a lot of what's happened in Texas was all included into the single bill. I mean, it's really a conglomerate of model legislation produced by right-wing think tanks like the Manhattan Institute and National Association of Scholars. It contains approximately 15 different issue areas. So it's a very big bill. You know, I would say that virtually every aspect of the bill is concerning in some way. So much of the bill would impose onerous mandates on public institutions of higher education. And what's particularly frustrating about some of these is that, you know, these proposed edicts attempt to micromanage what institutions already have figured out how to do well for themselves. So if someone didn't know anything about Ohio Higher Education and picked up SB 83 to read it, they'd probably think, wow, Ohio colleges and universities don't have faculty evaluations or tenure and retrenchment policies, and that there is a free speech crisis on campuses. But we know that this couldn't be further from reality, that there are policies already governing these things on our campuses. But I would say, you know, one of the greatest concerns from an AEP perspective about this bill is that it mandates so-called intellectual diversity in the classrooms. And it also creates complaint processes for students who feel that their quote unquote intellectual diversity rights were violated. So let me give you an example of how this could play out in a classroom situation. Say there is a political science course and the discussion is around U.S. presidential elections, and a student says that Joe Biden stole the 2020 election from Donald Trump. In this circumstance, is it acceptable that the professor simply says that isn't true and there's no evidence of that and simply moves on to a different topic? Or does the faculty member have to give substantial airtime to a conspiracy theory that has time and time again been debunked? And the answer to that is we don't know. And that's the problem that such a mandate presents, is that, you know, if a student felt embarrassed, maybe because their peers were snickering when they asked the question, or they believe their alleged rights were somehow violated, they might submit a complaint, which ultimately could hurt the faculty member when the faculty member, in fact, you know, didn't do anything wrong. So there are many problems with how this bill could be interpreted and how it could impact academic freedom. And of course, the intent is to chill academic freedom and to chill those open and honest classroom discussions and invite conspiracy theories into the classroom.
Thank you for listening to AAUP Presents. I'm the host, Mariah Quinn.
Hello and welcome back. It's time for Say What, where we hear from those connected to the industry and about what's going on in our world of electrical apprenticeship. I'm your host, Cindy Sandifer. So last year on the podcast, we chatted with Keith and Grace from the EWMC, the Electrical Workers Minority Caucus. And then we were fortunate enough to have Keith join us at NTI 2023 for a C group session, and he brought the EWMC National Secretary, Jamel Thrower, with him to that session. And you want to talk about a great person, great energy. And you know me by now, when I meet great, amazing, wonderful people, I want to get to know them and I want you to get to know them. I want to share their experiences with you. So today you get to meet Jamel. So what are you most excited about in, as far as our industry goes and the changes that you see coming?
So what gets me excited is the changes we're having and the ability to learn and ability to shape our industry. I remember in D.C. when I was growing up, I remember the steam. All the steam always came out around all the government buildings and different stuff. And mind you, that was the heating conditions. Solid state changed that. You don't see steam when you walk around downtown D.C. anymore, because solid state changed the way we heat our buildings. So that industry took a major shift in the 80s, if you remember. I see that shift coming to our industry now. As lighting controls change, the lighting controls are coming a whole lot more intense. The different power sections is coming a whole lot more intense. I see us now having to take learning to a whole new level, what we're required to learn and what electricians are required to know on the job site to get the job done. And I'm excited about that, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm excited about watching that growth spurt, because I think IBEW can be the lead in that growth spurt. Mm-hmm. And I really think that we can lead that path to really take over market share to benefit this country a lot and build our country up.
So true. How do we support the EWMC and the effort?
The best way I can say it, it's a two-way part, because it's us supporting you as well as you doing offering the support. And I want to say the support you can offer is have the doors and the avenues open so we can have open lines of communication. Mm-hmm. And it's us supporting you and getting the necessary qualified people, because what we're looking for is a industry that look like us, right? Mm-hmm. All of us, an industry that look like America, industry that works for all of us. And that includes everyone, all our underrepresented populations, and an ability to have our underrepresented populations come in and feel welcome. Because sometimes that's the biggest thing, not feeling welcome. I know I hear now a good amount from our LGBT community and them not feeling welcome on the job site, especially those that are trans. They generally have a huge fight in that process. So we're doing stuff and offering classes and trying to find avenues to make them feel welcome. So as long as from y'all's standpoint, there's a open line of communication, there's an avenue open to us where we can have them conversation with you, say, hey, look, this is because this section is talking about apprentices that's having that problem. And let's understand, we have a good amount of trans apprentices, you know, they get into the program and then decide to make that transition after they've gotten into the program. And that's a challenge, because that's a different process for instructors. That's a different process as it relates to documentation, because let's understand, apprenticeship work on documentation, and it works on government documentation.
Yes.
So for someone transitioning, it's a different world. And there's certain pieces that they got to understand. They want certain stuff done, but they can't get it done because there's also guidelines that being run by apprenticeship. So we like to talk to you about those. And as long as that avenue is open, I believe we can work together hand in hand in making a greater whole industry, you know, ETA, IBEW, and that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Say what?
Hello to the working people of Southwest Washington.
You're listening to episode 41 of Working to Live in Southwest Washington, produced by the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council. I'm Harold Phillips, and before we get started, we want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council, its affiliate unions, our guests' unions, or employers, not even your local plumber or pipe fitter or sprinkler fiddler or steam fitter. Yeah. And some of them are members of United Association Local 26, which represents plumbers, pipe fitters, service technicians, steam fitters, and a bunch of other specialized crafts. We just happen to have a member of UA26 here with us today, Ray Connor. And he's not just a UA26 member. He's also the newly elected president of the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council. Thanks for joining us, Ray.
Thank you for having me, Harold.
So, Ray, you were elected president in January, and it's late February now. How's that been going? It's kind of a transition for you, yeah?
Yeah, it is. I was a sergeant at arms, and all I did was hand out, you know, candy canes and sign people in, but now I have actually a job. Well, a better job, maybe a better job. But as president, I just run the meeting. And then I'm supposed to show up for different labor activities that happen during the month and show my support and organize candidate interviews. I've done this kind of stuff before. I've been the PAC chairman of my local for 15 years, and I was vice president for 12 years. My local's jurisdiction starts about the middle of Woodland, the county line, and it stretches to King County, and then it stretches from the King County line on the other side, north side, and stretches to Canada. That's my local union jurisdiction. Now, we have 120 or 130 members that live in this jurisdiction that I'm in now in Vancouver area. And that's one of the reasons why I was able to join as a delegate to the Southwest Washington Labor Council. And from there, I helped out by taking the sergeant at arms job and then now the presidential job. So that's how we got here.
As a pipe fitter, how do you relate to someone who's in, say, the office workers union or the public employees union? How do you relate so that you can come together and help the labor council make decisions like you were talking about before? I mean, isn't there kind of a disconnect there in the type of jobs that you do?
Well, yeah, but no. The union is there to help you with wages, working conditions, and safety. That's what we're here to help you with: your wages, your working conditions, and your safety. A nurse who has to go to work and has to worry about one of her patients assaulting her or having to lift more than she should. It's an amazing amount of nurses in this world who are messed up because they were having to pick up a patient that was too heavy and they messed up their backs. These are the kind of things that they talk about in their contract negotiations. There are different things that you have to negotiate about with different crafts. And the working conditions for a pipe fitter aren't always the same as the working conditions for an OP or a nurse.
Thank you, working people, for joining us on another episode of Working to Live in Southwest Washington, produced by the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council.
Welcome to another edition of On the Line, the podcast that revisits significant events from BC's rich labor heritage. I'm your host, Rod Mickleborough. In this episode, marking Black History Month, we take a look at an extraordinary event that took place along the Canada-US border more than 70 years ago. It features two larger-than-life figures, Harvey Murphy, the balding, Polish-born, heavy-set, and no-holds-barred regional director of the International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelters Workers Union, and Paul Robeson, the imposing Black American artist, known around the world for his powerful singing voice and fearless crusade for peace, universal justice, and an end to racial discrimination in the United States. Both men were victims of the Cold War and anti-communist hysteria that had been sweeping the United States and Canada since the late 1940s. Murphy's union, Mine Mill, was the dominant mining union in BC, but it had been thrown out of the AFL-CIO and the Canadian Congress of Labour for its communist leadership. As for Paul Robeson, he had had his passport lifted by the U.S. State Department for no other reason than his outspoken views. As a result, he was unable to travel to England and Europe, where he was a huge star. And in his own country, his concerts were boycotted and often disrupted by anti-communist thugs. These twin circumstances brought Harvey Murphy and Paul Robeson together for what became an historic concert on an area of parkland known as Peace Arch Park, 50 kilometers south of Vancouver, right on the border. Historian Ron Verjou has researched and written about the concert. In a recent interview with On the Line, he explains why Paul Robeson was singled out by American authorities.
He wanted to see the world change for the better for everybody, and that got you in trouble in those days. And also, the first thing they went to was they accused him of being a communist. Once you do that to somebody in the Cold War 50s, you're toast. They go after you endlessly, as they did Robeson and Murphy.
I want to thank you for being here today. I want to thank Harvey Murphy and the mine, mill, and smelter workers. I can't tell you how moved I am at this moment. It seems that nothing can keep me from my beloved friends in Canada. I stand here today under great stress because I dare, as do you, all of you, to fight for peace and a decent life for all men, women, and children, wherever they may be. And especially today, I stand fighting for the rights of my people in this America in which I was born. You have known me through many years. I am the same Paul, fighting a little harder because the times call for harder struggles. This historic occasion today probably means that I shall be able to sing again as I want to, to sing freely without being stopped here and there. What is being done at this Peace Arch today will ring out, is already ringing out around the world. I thank you deeply.
Robeson stuck mostly to his familiar repertoire of spirituals and old ballads, plus Old Man River, his showstopper from the Broadway musical Showboat that first made him famous. He also sang about slavery, and, perhaps as a nod to the concert's union sponsor, he sang about Joe Hill, the legendary wobbly organizer shot by a firing squad in Utah.
Dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. In Salt Lake City, Joe, says I, am standing by my bed. They framed you on a murder charge, says Joe, but I'm dead. Says Joe, but I'm dead. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to organize. Joe Hill ain't dead, he says to me. Joe Hill ain't never died. Where working men defend their rights, Joe Hill is at their side. Joe Hill is at their side. From San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where workers strike and organize, it's there you'll find Joe Hill. It's there you'll find Joe Hill. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he.
Hey, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. Just a small sample of the programs aired over the last week on more than 200 labor radio and podcast shows. They're all part of the Labor Radio Podcast Network, shows that focus on working people's issues and concerns. We've got links to all the network shows, laborradionetwork.org. You can also find them, use the hashtag Labor Radio Pod on X, Facebook, and Instagram. Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, edited this week by Patrick Dixon. I produce the show, and our social media guru, as always and forever, none other than Harold Phillips. For the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, this is Chris Garlock urging you to stay active and, of course, stay tuned to your local Labor Radio Podcast show. See you next week.